I was hoping to do some fine-tuning on this, but our prodigal daughter came home and sounded like they killed the fatted calf out there and everybody was feasting. So there wasn't a lot of quiet. Anyway, what I want to go over today is Ephesians 6:12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So today I'm going to pull back the curtain. We're going to take a peek at this spiritual world where they have the rulers of darkness and spiritual wickedness in high places. A lot of people aren't even, well, they have a general idea. And we find a lot of this in the book of Daniel. Matthew 17:19 and 21. Because it's important to understand the spiritual powers at play in this world, because it will be instrumental in understanding the interpretations of Daniel's prophecy. It's important to understand that not all heavenly and fallen angels are instilled with the same power. Some of them are more powerful than others. Matthew 17:19 says, then came the disciples, they came to Christ after they couldn't cast this demon out. They're casting out all the demons. And then they come up to Christ and ask the disciples to Jesus apart and said, why could we not cast them out? And Christ says, howbeit this kind goeth not out but by prayer and fasting. So there are different types or different kinds of fallen angels. Some are a lot more powerful than even the heavenly angels, believe it or not, as we're going to see in Daniel. Satan has a very high position, as we talked about that last night. And he's considered the god of this world. He has an office that he received as Lucifer to help facilitate us to understand Yahweh's law. So Lucifer meant light bringer. But he never lost that office when he became Satan. He's gonna hold it all the way up until Christ returns and knocks him off his throne. And some people think it's unseemly to study Satan, like he's gonna rub off on you or something. Like, it ain't any different than a psychoanalyst, you know, looking at a serial murderer. He doesn't become a serial murderer because he's examining him. So we're gonna kind of inspect some of Satan's ways here. Paul told us not to be ignorant of his devices. And 2 Corinthians 11:14 says, and no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. And boy, can he do that. It's amazing. I always ask, when I read that, I always like to ask that question. Who do you think is more holy? Someone who used expensive cologne on them, or somebody took the cologne and sold it to the poor, gave it to the poor, the money. And most people, if they don't know who I'm talking about, they'll say, well, the person who sold the cologne and took the money and gave it to the poor. Well, that was Judas. Judas recommended that, and Christ allowed, above all things, they claimed that she was a prostitute that rubbed it all over his feet and wiped it with her hair. And so I'm just saying that Satan sometimes can look more religious than God to the carnal mind. You know, if you put these things towards people and you present this to them, they usually pick Judas, not knowing who's who. Okay, Matthew 10:16. Christ says, behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. We know the serpent, what they said, he was the most wiliest being in the field, you know. So we're supposed to understand Satan's way and how he works. And as Paul says, we're not to be ignorant of his devices. Now here's something that always kind of astonished me. And it's in Matthew 8:7-10. It was a centurion. He was commanded a Roman legion. He had a sick servant. And he came up to Christ to ask him to heal him. And Yahshua said unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this man, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. And Yahshua heard it, he marveled, and said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great a faith in all of Israel. What did he do that was so different than all these other people of great faith that were healed? Well, one thing, he understood the hierarchy, the spiritual hierarchy, and it was real to him. And that's what I'm hoping to do today, is to kind of look at that world and the spiritual world as a centurion did. There was no theory about it. He knew about it. Daniel 10:7. Because the prophets, Daniel 10:7 through 10 or 12. So Daniel gives a good battle of the spiritual world. The prophets and the apostles knew about the spiritual world, but they were shown it. This centurion wasn't shown anything. Like he told Thomas, you believe because you see, but blessed is he who doesn't see and believes. So he didn't see this, but he believed it. Daniel 10:7. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled and hid themselves. Therefore I was left alone and saw the great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in unto corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet heard I the voice of the words, and when I heard the voice of the words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face towards the ground. And behold, a hand toucheth me, and set me on my knees, and then on the palms of my hand. Verse 12. Then said he unto me, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before God, thy words were heard, and I've come for thy words. Now this is Daniel at this time, he basically was on a bread and water diet to chastise himself. He said he ate no good food, just basically basic food and water, and he did that for 21 days. Now this is the heavenly angel Gabriel speaking in Daniel 10:13. Here's where I want to concentrate on. He says, I came as soon as your prayer went out, but the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me for 20 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me and remained there with the kings of Persia. Now this is the... Then he goes on to say, knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee? And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. Grecia is Greece. But I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of truth. And there is none that holdeth with me these things but Michael your prince. So him and Michael are the only one who understood these things. But you notice that the prince of Persia had the power to hold back an angel of God from Gabriel, from heaven. And he could only break through with the help of the archangel Michael. So this is a very powerful. These aren't normal humans. These are powerful spiritual fallen beings that can hold back Gabriel. And it astonished me. They go over these verses, and I don't hear any commentary on these. They naturally think, well, it's just a metaphor. Yeah, it's a metaphor. But metaphors mean something in the Bible. So we know that the prince isn't, the prince of Persia isn't human. And it reminds me of, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness in this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. These spirits are invisible to the human eye. Christ said that when we're born again into the Spirit, John 3:6, that which is born of the flesh is of the flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is the Spirit. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but cannot tell where it cometh, and whither it goeth. So is everyone that is born of the Spirit. And Elijah was a prophet, and he could see the spiritual world. He was with his servant, and his servant was petrified, because they were surrounded by this army. He didn't know what to do, the servant. And Elijah had him open up his eyes to see all the angels that are round about in the mountains. And he says, greater is those with us than those with him. Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. And Elijah prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elijah. So we're going to concentrate on examining another very powerful spiritual being that comes from the four of Alexander the Great's four generals. After Alexander the Great died, there were four generals that took his place, and they created four kingdoms. There was Thrace, Egypt, Macedonia, and Syria. But the only two they really talk about is Syria and Egypt. The king of the north is Syria. We know this from Daniel 11. Daniel 11, they go through generations of the king of the north fighting the king of the south, and it's always Syria and Egypt. And the land bridge between Syria and Egypt was Israel, so they had to go through Israel. So Israel was always somehow involved with these battles between the king of the north and the king of the south, which is Syria and Egypt. Okay, Daniel 8:16, and I heard a man's voice between the banks of Uli, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. And that's interesting, because there's a lot of things that Daniel, even though he recorded them, he did not understand them. In Daniel 12:8, and it says, and I heard, but I understood not. Then I said, O Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. So I think it's on this generation that we're to understand this. Okay, going back to Daniel 8. He's using all these different metaphors. Daniel jumps back and forth from different metaphors. You know, in Daniel 2, they use the metaphor of the metals, the head of gold and the silver and the brass and the iron and clay. And he also uses animals as metaphors for the same kingdoms. In Daniel 8:20, the ram which thou sawest hath two horns. They are the kings of Media Persia. So here he's shown a ram, and it's the Media Persian Empire. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. That's Alexander the Great. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for them, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in Alexander's power. They were never as powerful as Alexandra. But that's these four generals I'm telling you about that made up the king of the north and the south and the east and the west. In the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have come to full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. And his power shall be mighty, but not of his own power. This is who I want to talk about. What they're speaking of here, there's no doubt about it. Everyone pretty much agrees, including Josephus. And this is Antiochus Epiphanes. And he was very powerful. I know we know all of biblical villains in the Bible, the Pharaoh and King Herod. This one was more powerful than any of them. Just he didn't get to last a long time. God took him out in a horrible way, too. Okay, and he shall destroy wonderfully and shall prosper in practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. And he shall magnify himself in the heart, and by peace shall destroy many. Well, if you read the book of Maccabees, there was a bunch of Jews where they came up and he wanted to meet and talk about peace, and they did not trust him. But his presentation was so humble and sincere, they said, well, okay, we're going to go talk with him. Well, he had his army slaughter him. That's how Satan works. His army slaughtered those people after he spoke peace with them. So by peace he shall destroy many, and shall also stand up against the prince of princes. I believe that's, they're talking about Michael the archangel. But he shall be broken without hand. Without hand means God's doing it. And he died a most miserable death. It just, his servants couldn't get next to him. His stench was so bad. Nobody could. He couldn't even stand his own stench. And at the end, he says, this probably isn't good for man to believe he's God. And that was the epiphany. He came to an epiphany. So you notice his mighty power is not of his own. I happen to believe Antiochus Epiphanes was possessed by Satan. Okay, and Daniel 8:9, and out of one of them, the four generals, came forth a little horn. This isn't the little horn in Daniel 7. That little horn in Daniel 7 is a false prophet during the tribulation, the 666 beast. This is Antiochus Epiphanes, which waxed great exceedingly toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. Those are the directions he went. You know, he first went to the south, then he went to the east, then he went towards the pleasant land. He went to Egypt, Persia, and then he went after Israel. Those are the exact directions that Antiochus Epiphanes went. In the book of Maccabees, which is, what do you call it? When it's not sanctioned, what is that called? When it's not sanctioned, they have a word for it. When the scriptures, huh? Yeah, I think that might be it. That's that sun worshiper Constantine sanctioned them. Anyway, the book of Maccabees is a great historical book. And it says this in Maccabees. Thus did Antiochus Epiphanes wax great towards the south to Egypt, and in the 140th year of the kingdom of Grecia, the next direction was toward the east, Persia. And he was greatly perplexed in mind and purpose to go into Persia and to take tributes in the countries and to gather much money. So the king took half of the army that remained and went forth from Antioch and the chief city of his kingdom. And in the 147th year, and he passed over the river Euphrates and went through the higher countries. Maccabees 3, 31 through 27. So Antiochus fulfills this prophecy. And the last direction was towards Israel, the pleasant land. In Daniel 8:10, and he waxed great, even to the host of heaven. And he cast down some of the host of the stars to the ground and stomped upon them. These are talking about angels. I often wonder why people just pass over this, because it's an astounding thing to say. And we're going to prove that he's talking about angels. Many think it's just a metaphor to be ignored, but the Bible will interpret its own metaphors, and that's what we're going to do here. And so he could, you know, the host usually means a large, for those people who don't know, a large group of people are usually an army. And usually when they call him the prince of hosts, he's a prince of the army. And so this is, we're going to examine these metaphors. Now, Christ uses stars to symbolize angels. Revelations 1:20. Now, remember, let's read that verse again. And he waxed great even to the host of heaven, and cast down some of the host and the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. Here's Christ, Revelation 1:20. The mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in thy right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks, the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. You notice how he uses stars as a metaphor for angels. And the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches. Also in Revelation 12:4. And his tail, they're talking about Satan, the dragon here, which they say is Satan in Revelation. And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. Now, we know that a third of the angels rebelled with Satan. So here the metaphor is used as stars. So Daniel 8:10 is talking about angels. It's going to become more clear as we go along. So I'm going to look at this little horn a little bit more, which is Antiochus Epiphanes. The reason why I'm going here, because there's a future form of Antiochus Epiphanes that's going to happen again. We'll see it as we go along here. Daniel 8:8. Therefore, the he-goat waxed very great, the he-goat being Alexander the Great. And when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And it came out four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And they went in four different directions, the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn which waxed exceedingly great toward the south and towards the east. And he magnified himself even to the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifice was taken away. And the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And he did take the daily sacrifice away. He went in and killed a bunch of Jews and raised up priests that were loyal to him. And he put a statue of Zeus in God's temple and had him sacrifice pigs to him. So this was a horrible abomination. Yeah. And the Maccabee ended up cleansing the temple. That's where Hanukkah comes from. They're celebrating that, not the miracle of the candle being lit for 8 days or whatever they say. Okay, Daniel 8:12. And a host was given unto him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression. And it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced, and it prospered. Now here's Josephus talking out of Antiquity of the Jews. And indeed, Josephus was a first century historian. And he says, and indeed, it so came to pass that our nation suffered these great things under Antiochus Epiphanes, according to Daniel's vision. And what he wrote years before, they came to pass. No prophecy was ever more accurately fulfilled than this. But, than Antiochus Epiphanes. Some people who are new here, this was a future event for Daniel, but this is a past historical event for us. So we can look at history and tell what happened. But Antiochus Epiphanes was a precursor to a future abomination of desolation that Christ spoke of. And he is going to be possessed by Satan as Antiochus Epiphanes was. 2 Thessalonians talks about it. 2 Thessalonians 2:2, that ye be not soon shaken in mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter as from us, as a day of Christ is at hand. Many say that. It could come any day, but he can. He gave us certain signs to watch. And until those signs come true, he's not coming. And that's what Paul's saying here. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there be a great falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. The son of perdition means he has a one-way ticket to the lake of fire. 2 Thessalonians 2:4, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, for that he that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And then Paul goes on to mention the great lying wonders that he goes on and creates. And I happen to believe it has to do with what Christ says. And you shall see such great signs and wonders, if it were possible, it will deceive the very elect. They can't deceive the very elect because they're out of the way. Either they're killed or they're in hiding at this time. There's more that come to the truth as the two witnesses preach out of Jerusalem. But it's impossible to deceive the very elect at that time. 2 Thessalonians, he's got to remove anybody who understands prophecy out of the way. And that's what he does. 2 Thessalonians 2:8, and then shall the wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all powers and signs and lying wonders. So he's going to have all kinds of signs he's going to be shown that's going to look like it's the coming Messiah, and it won't be. This is the thing everybody has to watch out for. And Daniel 7:3, and four great beasts came up out of the sea, diverse one from another. Now here he uses metaphors of animals again. And he's talking about the same ones. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And I beheld till his wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on his feet like a man, and a man's heart was given it. This is obviously Nebuchadnezzar. This is Babylon, because that's what happened to him. He turned him into an animal. Then after 7 years, he restored his human reasoning to him. And behold, another beast, the second one, like a bear, and it raised up against it on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth, and it was between his teeth. And he said thus, arise and devour much flesh. After this, I beheld, and lo, like a leopard, which had, now we know that the bear is Persia. After this, I beheld, and lo, a bear like a leopard, another like a leopard, not a bear, which had upon its back four wings of a fowl, and the beast had also four heads, and dominion was given it. Those are the four generals after Alexander the Great that goes in four different directions with the four wings and four heads. They're all dedicated to Alexander the Great, but they go in their own direction. We know from the benefit of history that Daniel's four beasts came in chronological order, the first being Babylon the Lion, the last the resurrected Roman Empire, I think it is, pictured by the dreadful beast. The mirror image Daniel in Revelation needs to be studied, and the reason why I say this is because it goes out of sequence. In Revelation it says, the beast which thou saw was like a leopard, and his feet were the feet of a bear, and his mouth gave him his mouth, a mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. You ever wonder how, when Daniel 2, when Christ hits the feet of the statue, that not only does he knock down the feet, but Babylon, Persia, Greece, all of them fall down. Well, how can that be? They've been long gone. How can that be? When Christ returns, which didn't even happen yet. Well, they're talking about the spiritual powers behind the thrones are all going to throw in with the 666 beast, and there's going to be a confederacy. And all these super powerful fallen angels are going to be joined together. We see that in Revelation. But in Daniel's order, it's lion, bear, leopard, dreadful beast. But in Revelation's order, it's dreadful beast, leopard, bear, lion. So I usually stop to look at that because there's a sequence. Well, let me go on and keep on reading. I'll get the verse for you. And four beasts which are the six wings about him, and they were filled with eyes, and they rest not day and night, saying, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come. So these are seraphim. And God created these beings to say this 24/7. So it has to be extremely important. And he says, which was and is to come. That's proper chronological linear time. But it's past, present, and future. But there's things that happen where this sequence is out of order. So whenever I see something that's out of order, I examine it. And it usually means something. It's like if you ever seen the movie The Matrix, and there was a glitch in The Matrix when he saw the black cat go by. Well, there's a glitch here in the program when you see that time out of order. And it happens more than a few times in Revelation. And when he's doing it, it's like Daniel says, he changes the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. So when that happens, he's usually knocking down a king or setting up a king. And you'll see that in Revelation. I don't have time to go through all the verses. But when that time order, it's changed. Instead of past, present, and future, it's present, past, and future. And that usually is a signal that there's a kingdom being knocked down and set up. But the reason why they're replaced in reverse order in Revelation, it's no big deal, really. It's because in Daniel, they're presenting them. Whereas in Revelation, they're being knocked down. And you see in Daniel chapter 2, when it's knocked down, it's the feet the first thing that get hit. Then everything, when everything falls, it falls in that order. That's all it's that's all it means. There's no, there is a change. There is a new kingdom being set up. Daniel 2:34. Then sawest till the stone was cut without hands. This is the great image that Daniel's prophecy. And that stone cut without hands means it's of God. It's not of man. This is Christ's return, which smote the image upon the feet that were the iron and the clay, and break them to pieces. And if thou, Exodus 20:25, he says, if you make a temple, you shall. If you do any stones, you can't lift a tool against it. That means without hands. No man could do it. So if you notice the sequence, after Christ obliterates, after his return, you'll see that there was iron, number one, iron and clay, then the brass, then the silver, then the gold, broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor. And the wind carried them away. But evidently, when Christ returns, like I said, these empires, Babylon and Persia and Greece, they are going to be in power. But it's not the physical empires we see, it's the spiritual empires. And the powerful spiritual angels behind these kingdoms that they're looking at. That's why you see them all together when Christ returns, when we know the physical empire has been long gone. So Antiochus Epiphanes will be possessed by Satan, and there's going to be a future. Antichrist that's going to come and do the abomination of desolation. And he's even allowed to stand up against Michael, with the prince of the host. Okay, as we know, before Satan rebelled, he was Lucifer, and he was given the high position. And here's what we got to understand, like you said, Mark, yesterday, about these preachers having Satan on a rope and they're whipping them, and that's a definite no-no. We're not supposed to be doing that. Satan has a high office, and he's evil, and we're not supposed to follow him, but Yahweh put him in that position. It's not up to us to take him out of that position. There's an example, many examples like that in the Bible. Notice in the book of Jude, where the warnings are given about certain men crepping unawares who do not understand about the spiritual hierarchy set up by the Creator Yahweh. In Jude 1:8, it says, likewise, these filthy dreamers defile the flesh, despise dominion, and speak evil of dignitaries. So that's what we're going to be talking about in Jude. Despising dominion and speaking evil of dignitaries. Then they give an example. Jude 1:9. Yet Michael, the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed against the body of Moses, did not bring against him railing accusations, but said, the Lord rebuke thee. So this is telling you that Satan still has a very high office, that even the archangel Michael cannot rebuke him. The Lord has to rebuke him until Christ returns and knocks him off his throne. Jude 1:10, but these speak evil of those things which they know not, but what they know naturally as brute beasts, and whose things they corrupt themselves. So the archangel Michael had the Lord rebuke him. He didn't rebuke him. Christ rebuked him, but he's a higher position than Satan. We're not. Not right now. And like I say, you hear all these preachers railing against Satan and stuff. He can go up before Yahweh and hold that against him. He's the accuser of our brethren. He still has that position. And if anyone goes against him, they're going against God's dominion. until Christ come and takes them out. So if the gospel be hid, here Paul refers to Satan as the god of this world, it be hid by those who are lost, in whom the god of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine upon them. I mean, the Bible is clear that Satan is our adversary and he's the enemy, no doubt about that. But the Father put him in that elevated position, and it's only he who can take him out. And he has used his high position for evil, and for this reason, he's not to be obeyed. But we do not have the right to attack him when we do, because we're going against God's dominion when we do that. The perfect example is his position is not like an evil King Saul who was always out to kill David. I don't know how many times he did that. In this instance, he had 3,000 men go after King David. David hid in a cave, and they went in there, and they didn't know David's men were in the cave, and they rested. And, well, let me read it to you. 1 Samuel 24:3, and he came to the sheepcotes by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men of David said unto him, behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I'll deliver thine enemy into thy hand, and thou mayest do it to him as it shall be good unto thee. And David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privately. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So God put him in that position, even though he was evil. God put Saul in that position, and David understood that. So David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise up against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went his way. Like King Saul, Satan is evil, and he's out to destroy us, no doubt about that. But God can protect us from him. It's his protection. But still we have no power over Satan, at least at this time. At one time we will, when we're changed in our spiritual body. As Paul says, know ye not that you will judge angels? We'll be higher than him then. We'll have the makeup of God the Father in Christ. Well, to sum it up, God is a spirit, and we should make an effort to view and see through spiritual eyes, his spiritual world that he sees. As John 4:24 says, God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. Okay.